Welcome to the Super Gamer Podcast. Welcome to the new Super Gamer Podcast, episode 195. Just quickly, if my guest will bear with me, before we get to our guest, people may have noticed, it's been almost a month since we've had an episode. Took a bit of a mental health break. You know, sometimes you need that kind of thing. Happy to be back. Happy to have this guest. We have a speedrunner, Reddit mod, and GDQ staff member. We have Amerlin. Thank you for being here.
Hi.
And right off the bat, you're also, I have to razz you a bit, you're a Penguins fan.
That's right. I married my wife, who grew up in Pittsburgh, and I wasn't into hockey until our first date was to the one of the Stanley Cup Finals.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, oh, well, I'll be a Penguins fan now, sure.
I mean, that's an amazing first date. who decided you were going there?
She had season tickets, and so I was like, sure, that seems interesting. And kind of went like that.
Well, that's actually a very good reason to be a Penguins fan, so I'll cut you some slack there.
Thank you.
I'm an Oilers fan. I'm a Canadian, not actually from Edmonton, but since I was yay high, love the Oilers. Anyway, how was PAX East? You were just there.
It was great. It was the first time I've ever been to a PAX. So I like didn't really know what to expect, and it was a lot different because I've worked a lot of GDQs. I've worked one TwitchCon so far, and that was really interesting as well. And there were PAX was a lot more like demo focused, which I looked up nothing about PAX before going, so I was just genuinely shocked at like how many games were just being shown on the floor. And actually, I found one that I really liked, and so I guess you could call it a good trip.
Which game was that?
It's called Beat Slayer. It came out yesterday. It's like this combo of Hades and Necrodancer. Crypt of the Necrodancer.
Yeah, yeah.
Whips. The game is awesome.
I love both of those games, so I'll have to check that out. Funny enough, PAX East, and I don't know if you're in Pittsburgh, you don't have to say, but I'm quite a bit farther from PAX East than that. I'm in the middle of Canada, and that is actually, though, this iteration of this podcast, PAX East was like the beginning of it 4 years ago.
Oh, nice.
The first time I went.
I live in Philly, so it's like a 5-hour drive.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I took a plane to Montreal, met up with a friend, and then drove down. Anyway, GDQ. I got a lot of GDQ stuff because you've been a producer there for about 6 years, but you just did your first solo run. Solo runs, you did Aragami and you did Neon White at AGDQ. Loved the Neon White run. I mean, what are your thoughts on doing those?
So Neon White was at TwitchCon, and that was...
Pardon me.
Yeah, no, it's all good. That was... It wasn't the first... I count Aragami as my first solo run because it's the first solo run I've done in like a mainline GDQ event. I've done like individual stuff for like hotfix shows and smaller marathons and stuff like that.
I see.
For Neon White specifically, it is my game of the year of 2023. I don't remember what year it came out. Which startled some people considering that Elden Ring also came out that year. But I think Neon White is just the perfect speedrun game. It's fast, it's quick. The levels restart really fast. The movement is just snap precise. There's a relatively low floor to be able to get in to the game and learn to speedrun it, but the skill ceiling is unbelievably high. Like I'm not gonna say I'm good at the game. I'm reasonably good at like the side quest runs, which is what I did. But there are people way better than me at the main game, and the stuff that they do in that run is, I had to, when I was running the game, I had to back off and be like, okay, I'm not gonna touch some of this, because it wasn't worth grinding as hard as they do. But yeah, I think it is an incredible game.
I mean, your run, you didn't die once, so, you know, you seem super amped at the end of it, that you didn't die.
Yep. So the thing about that run was it was a hell run, which in Neon White means that if you die, you have to restart the whole rush. And I had gotten like one deathless run throughout all of my practice, so I was super hyped to get that on stage.
Yeah, the game reminds me of like all the best parts of Quake 2, like when it was modded with like the grappling hook and stuff, like just yep. the way the movement works. I was like, oh, that's totally the feel I get here.
Yep. Yeah. Yep, and in the base game, the way they introduce all the movement is so smart that, you know, they do it a little bit at a time, and eventually it just ramps up to this, like, ridiculous end game, you know, where you're using every single card at once. It's really good. I like the game a lot. I could talk about it for a long time.
Well, one thing you said during the run that I'm definitely interested in, just speedrunning-wise, you said, this is a level, I think it was in the Yellow Rush, is that what they're called? This is a level I've really tried to break a bunch, which I'm always like, yeah, for, like, you know, speedrunners, people who, pro speedrunners, if you will, like, how are you looking for ways to break it? What are you looking for?
Yeah, and I think I know exactly the level you're talking about. It's a long fireball level. So it means different things in different games. Like for Neon White specifically, what I'm looking for in that kind of level is ways to avoid doing the path that the game wants you to go on, right? It's not necessarily a lot of glitches. The game is actually fairly unbreakable. There's not much that's, you know, glitched about it. So in that case, it's, can I spawn a rocket launcher to get me up to the top of the cliff and then I just run to the end of the level? Or can I, you know, spawn a different weapon and use it to cut around a corner that'll save like 3 seconds over doing it another way. But the problem with that is, if it saves 3 seconds, is there another skip I could do in another level that saves more than 3 seconds? Because I only get 3 of the discards throughout the level. So it's this really intricate, you know, almost Tetris-like, you gotta build the run as it goes.
Right.
Which is why I really like speedrunning, because I think it's one of the last remaining online, like, truly community-driven things. Like, everybody is working towards a goal to bring the game lower. So.
Well, I think that's a good segue, then. In 2017, you put a $150 bounty on a specific part of Borderlands 2, asking if anyone could find a way to skip this part that you said was boring and you didn't like it. Like, first off, did anyone do it? And two, like, was that worth it?
No, I mean, so no one's claimed the bounty. It's still open. If you want to find a way to break the angel segment in Borderlands 2, you know, feel free. Me and a bunch of the people running the game at the time, you know, put at least 30 hours into trying to figure out how to break that segment. And the thing about Borderlands is I ran it for a while. I think I have like 1500 hours or something. It is also an incredibly well-coded game as long as you only play the main quests. If you play the side quests, those are more broken. But since the part that I put the bounty up for is in the main quest, they decided to do a real good job coding it. You know, so we're spending a bunch of time in there. Like, we figured out how to despawn enemies. We figured out how to get out of the map. We figured out how to despawn the NPCs that are supposed to be there. We figured out how to restart the encounter when it doesn't want you to. But every time we would do it, the game would either ignore what we were doing and just continue on with what, you know, was coded to happen, or it would break in a way that was completely useless for us. I could explain a little bit about the segment. So you're supposed to spawn 3, basically, generators and kill them. And it's a scripted segment that takes about 5 minutes, assuming you're doing it, you know, relatively optimally, killing all the enemies, etc. And we would break it to spawn a generator early, and then it would go, okay, you've done 1. Now you've done 4 out of 3 generators. And it's like, cool, this is useless. We just spent all this time for you to do the same thing again. So,
again, I'm left wondering, like, are you, you know, 30 hours trying to break this? Are you just, like, jumping against every wall? Or, you know, are you, like, running into enemies? Or you're just doing absolutely everything you can think of? Or what?
Yeah, so nowadays, We actually have a collision detector for Borderlands that lets us just basically see the wireframes of all the maps. So we know, like, what walls are real and what walls aren't. But at that time, yeah, it was just jumping against every wall. You know, we knew about some of the more esoteric things with Borderlands for, like, quite a while. Some of the things that would... that were not helpful at all. Like how enemies respond in and stuff like that. And so we figured if we could somehow get to that area, you know, maybe that'll help. So the first challenge there is, okay, let's get outside the map, which is difficult, but you know, we know of ways to make it work. And then it's try to find the spawn box. Well, okay, the spawn box is 1,000 feet below us. Falling down there is going to take forever. All right, back to the drawing board.
Part, I'm sure eventually it's like, oh my god, but it sounds like that'd be fun for a little while, like, yeah, you know, the discovery of it.
Yeah, and actually something that's more a glitch that we discovered that more fits the bill of this is a lot of fun to work with. I don't know if you've seen Borderlands runs, but we do a duplication glitch in it, and it was discovered by one of the runners, the Fun Cannon's partner at the time, because they swapped weapons and pressed the drop key on the same frame. And apparently nobody had ever done that before. Or if they done it, they did it on accident. And they accidentally dropped two weapons. So we went, that's weird. And eventually it led to what the game is today, which is every runner has two mice. And they bind a drop to scroll up and swap to scroll down. And then you just scroll in opposite directions. And it flings a gazillion guns out of your body. But what it does is it raises the damage that you do with critical hits. So we just stack that and we wind up, you know, massively under level, sprinting through the game. Entirely glass cannon build, just destroying all the bosses. And if they manage to shoot us, we die. But we can usually shoot them first.
That's a funny dupe, because it's almost like Diablo 1, like where you would pick up a potion and drop an item at the same time, and it's like, wow, we're still doing that, eh?
Yep.
You used to be roommates with your Borderlands 2 partner, Shock Woov.
Yeah.
Who got into speedrunning first? Like, were you roommates first, or did that come about because of speedrunning?
So... rooming with Shock is a really interesting thing, because we both went to the same college, and on my very last day of college, I overheard him talking about how he was going to AGDQ 2015. And so, you know, full of gumption, I walked up and said, hey man, let's, you know, meet up and hang out at AGDQ 2015. And we did. And he introduced me to this game, A Hat in Time. I was like, this game is great. It's in beta. I got to play it a lot. It's so much fun. And, you know, I got really into the speedrunning community of that and met some people there that I, like, still talk to today. And then Hat in Time was still in beta for another year or so. And so Shock and I said, okay, what are we going to do to kill the time between now and A Hat in Time coming out? Let's just get into Borderlands 2 speedrunning. And... all of our runs are still, they're still public, so you can see the incredibly embarrassing, you know, 3 hour, 40 minute first run that we did, where I, like, forgot how to do infinite ammo halfway through the run. It was very bad, but, you know, we improved at it pretty quickly, and I think we got the record within, like, 3 months of starting. That's, like, entirely not to denigrate the former world record holders, who were very good at the game. It's just that right when we got into the game, that glitch that Kestrel, who is the person who discovered the duplication glitch, that was found. So we were the first people to just really hit the ground running with that glitch. And so we wound up, you know, taking record fairly easily, because it broke the game's difficulty in half. So he was a year behind me in college. After we hung out at AGDQ 15, you know, we became pretty good friends. And when he graduated, I was already living in Pennsylvania, I'd moved up here for a job, and he said, "Hey, can I move in with you?" So we lived together for like 2 years, and then I met my spouse at AGDQ 2017 after our Borderlands run, and then a couple years later I moved in with her. So really, it's really funny because we do actually talk about this in our friend group a lot, how literally the final day of my final day of college unequivocally altered the trajectory of my life. Like, if I had not gotten into speedrunning, if I had not gotten into going to GDQs, if I had not gotten into Borderlands speedrunning, I would be somewhere else. I would be a different person. So I just think it's very interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. I was going to say, but evidently it happened before, or you're saying it happened at the last day of college. I was going to say AGDQ. Yeah, you met your wife, you met your roommate, you know. Yep. It's obviously, you've also, like we said, you've been a producer there for about 6 years. You've done all these runs. Like, it's a huge part of your life.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. Production is somewhat like, I really enjoy working the events. I think it's a lot of fun. I definitely encourage people who are into speedrunning to like try to go to a GDQ, because, you know, the vibe there is extremely welcoming. You know, they're like, I'm going to sound like I'm selling the event here, and I'm going to try not to, because I really like it. But like, you can see someone in the practice room, like playing a game you've never seen before, and you can just go, "Hey, like, what is this game? And like, what do you do?" And most of the time people will explain it to you, you know, so you can just sit down and get like a 1 hour crash course in freaking Billy Hatcher and the Giant Egg or whatever.
Is he going to be coming back to Minnesota anytime soon? Because that's drivable.
Yep. The summer one, which we are picking submissions for right now. So I've spent the past week and a half browsing through the 2,000 videos that have been submitted. Yeah, the next one's in Minneapolis.
So yeah, you are on the selection committee, obviously. So what makes for a successful GDQ pitch?
Very. Because there's, and I'm trying, like, some of this is like, I can't talk about it because it's like how we make decisions in the back end, but
you're like Google algorithm.
But in a general sense, there are, you know, different, like, quote unquote tiers of, not really tiers. There's different like categories. And we divide everything into like subcommittees. So, you know, there's one subcommittee that's just dedicated to like looking at all the Mario games that submitted. There's one subcategory dedicated to all the FPS games. There's one for all the licensed games, you know, stuff like that. And, you know, a lot of the time we'll get, you know, really top level runners submitting to us. It's weird because I can't exactly like nail down what makes a successful GDQ pitch in, you know, just do this. I can certainly say that there are things that we like to see in videos. You know, we like to see runners having fun. We like when people are like really obviously excited to talk about whatever they're playing. We like it when there's stuff we haven't seen before, you know, either new games or new categories in games. But there's also, of course, always room for the classics. You know, if someone really good submits Super Mario 64, then yeah, I mean, that's a pretty strong submission right there if they're, you know, really good at it. But like, I'm personally, like, when I select games for GDQ, I like to look at a lot of the more esoteric ones. Because the production shift that I do is from 3 to 7 a.m. And so that's what's known as the graveyard. That's where we put all of the... it's not that they're unpopular, it's that they are less popular, which is entirely not a dig on the graveyard. Like, people who run the graveyard have come to know me very well because I've run it for the past, you know, 8 events or something like that. And I really love graveyard runs. I think they are some of the most interesting out there, because you get the people who are in like one or two or three person communities and are super excited to show you like Brilliant Bob, you know, just games that nobody knows. And a lot of the time I find that those runs are, to me, more interesting to watch than, you know, your Zeldas or your Marios, because I've seen, like, me personally, I've seen a lot of those runs before. But, you know, how often am I going to get to see someone do, you know, Fort Boyard the Challenge or something like that? It's just so fascinating to me.
I can say for myself, the reason I even got into GDQ, and this is, many years ago, I worked radio, and I would have the morning shift, which starts at 5 a.m. So just in the background, while I'm, like, you know, writing scripts and whatnot, I would just have GDQ on. And that was, the graveyard shift, you know, I probably only had maybe 2 hours I could have it on before things really picked up. But yeah, 5 to 7 a.m. was, like, my favorite part. That's why I was watching it.
Yeah, it's because, you know, that, like, obviously, every runner we have, I believe, has a passion for their game. Otherwise, they wouldn't be submitting it. But I find a lot of joy in watching and getting to put on runners from less well-known games so that they can demonstrate their passion. You know, getting someone to show off, like, Lego Bionicle at 3 a.m. That's tight. I think that's cool. Because they get to show off Lego Bionicle, you know? Where else are you going to get that?
I also think that, I mean, the 24-hour aspect of it is so, endearing is the wrong word, but it's so much a part of what is compelling, I guess, about AGDQ, that, like, for 7 days straight, any time of day, if I can't sleep at night, I can put that on.
Yeah. Yeah, there's certainly pros and cons to running the event 24/7. You know, a decent compare, because I talked to a decent comparison is the Frost or the Fatales event that GDQ also runs, because I talked to the organizers of that a lot. Some of them are actually on the production team for GDQ as well. You know, and they only do 12 hours a day. Okay, I don't want to say only. They do 12 hours a day, which is fine. I think it's fine for a whole week. And, you know, they certainly have a smaller pool to draw from, because they're just drawing from women and femme-identifying people. You know, and GDQ has a much, much wider pool to draw from. But for me personally, you know, if I were looking at this point, like, let's say GDQ didn't exist, and I wanted to start, you know, my own speedrunning charity marathon, and I wanted it to go big, I personally would feel very remiss to do anything but 24 hours, because I feel like, yeah, having stuff in prime time and having stuff, you know, having the Zeldas, the Marios, the Super Mario Odyssey, the real big ticket stuff, the one everybody and their mother has played, you know, and we splash it real big, you know, the runner's going to beat this game in an hour, and that gets people in. But speedrunning is more than just those big communities. You know, it's the one, it's the three, it's the four people, you know, grinding their small passion game that makes up almost a majority of the community, I feel. And if those people aren't getting represented, if they're not getting shown off on stage, then it tends to homogenize a lot of the views around speedrunning down to, oh, well, it's just Super Mario 64. It's just Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time. And those games are very popular, and they're popular for a reason. It's because they have 1,000 people working on the glitches for them. But I personally think it's a disservice to all the people out there if we're not able to show off the smaller games, because that's where you can really strike gold. That's where you can go, oh, you know, I'd have to spend so much time grinding to get really good at Super Mario 64. But this game, I can get into this game and help put my mark on it. You know, I can play this better. I can help glitch hunt in this game. And I think that is just, you know, fascinating. I think that's one of the greatest things about the community of speedrunning is that, you know, there's always new people coming in going, okay, I want to learn this run.
Well, you may have just answered. I'm curious about how certain games even become a speedrun kind of thing. For example, you're doing Titanic.
Oh, God.
Which is such a bizarre, like, how do you even, you know, you find it and then you're like, you know what? I bet I can do this faster.
Okay, so that one's a little bit of it. That one's, I am very blatantly just doing that to submit to AGDQ 2015. That there is not a, I'm trying to do this game better and good. That game was run by my good friend Author Blues in AGDQ 2016 or 2017, I think. And it is a horrendous game. That game is so bad. The controls are bad. The music is bad. The story is bad. Because for people who don't want to go look this up, it is spelled Titanic, not Titanic. There's an E there. And it was made by Hummer Cheng, who I don't know a lot of the history. I know some of it. When the console ban was in effect in China and they couldn't import SNESs, and they only had the NES, Hummer Cheng was a developer who basically illegally imported a bunch of, you know, American games and then rewrote them for the NES. So there's things out there like Super Mario Brothers, but by Hummer Cheng. And it's combined with Sonic, and he calls it Somari. There's a Donkey Kong Country for the NES from a Chinese developer. And Titanic was one of those games that Hummer Cheng developed. Unfortunately, he missed on that one. It's not a good game, but I think it's very funny, and I'm submitting it for the awful block.
It is. I was shocked at the style of game that it is. It's, what would you describe, a side scroller like shoot 'em up? Like, what is that?
Yeah, it's a side scroller beat 'em up. We all remember the famous time where Rose, while the boat was sinking, went into a kitchen cabin and kicked a man to death, right?
It is definitely one. I mean, as you were just saying, it is the kind of thing where, like, I would have never known about it, but you're speedrunning it, so I watched it, and I'm like, I'm so happy I know about this.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think the game is so very funny. It really bad. Would not necessarily recommend that people play it, but it's funny. It has a take on the story of Titanic.
Have you ever done a disc golf speedrun?
Not necessarily. I do. When I go to GDQs, I do try to spend some time outside of the event just to, like, get out of the room, honestly, because I'm in there for so long. But I started disc golfing in, like, 2016, and then I learned that my fellow committee member Brian Otto was also super into that. So now that we've gone back to in-person events, he and I have been going out disc golfing at least once an event. And we're actually really glad that we're going back to Minnesota, because there's a really good course near there named Blue Ribbon Pines. And it's, like, one of the top five disc golf courses in the world. So,
oh, neat.
We're super excited to be going back there.
Yeah.
We've definitely played fast rounds, but I don't know that we've done a speed run.
I like the image. I'd like to see disc golfers, like, running from hole to hole.
just try to, yeah, the challenge there would be accuracy, because if you're sprinting from course to course, right, then you don't have a lot of time to slow down.
So what's it like being a Reddit mod for the speedrun subreddit?
Oh, God. So up front, I love a lot of the people that post on that subreddit. They have some really interesting ways of viewing the world. Put it lightly. It's mostly normal. It's always one of the things that I find really shocking, because apparently we're like one of the top 1% of subreddits by size, but it doesn't feel like it. Like, there's three mods and we barely even talk to each other, because we're all just kind of like, yep, this is, you know, this needs to be, you know, removed or corrected or whatever. You know, when I came on, there was, you know, I wanted to help. I wanted to make it better. And it was only one mod at the time. So he was really grateful for the help. And honestly, it's not that bad most of the time. Like, there are some people who have really weird takes on there. There are people, like, I make it a personal policy of mine to, like, not really interfere with any post that, like, talks about GDQ, because, like, I work for them. So I'm not really going to, you know, remove a post that's like, oh, GDQ sucks now. It's like, okay, whatever. Mainly the main thing that people get really mad about there is transphobia, because speedrunning has a decently visible section of trans people, and, you know, it's one of those things where I think speedrunning, you know, it's obviously a very welcoming environment, so people just kind of feel free to be themselves in a place where they, you know, might necessarily not be able to. And there's some people who get really mad about that, and, you know, that's just, this is not the community to be doing that in. So that's, you know, I get some fairly interesting mod mail. I think I got one that called me a North Korean Nazi one time, which was pretty funny just from an abstract sense. But yeah, I mean, I don't really, you know, a lot of it just kind of rolls off my back, and a lot of it is, you know, just making sure people are having a good time talking about speedrunning.
Yeah.
It is mostly a news subreddit. It's mostly for, you know, here's the latest world record or whatever.
What about, I know you don't like how much focus or how content creators can kind of latch on to the idea of cheating in speedrunning. Is the cheating issue, is that like a fabricated thing?
Oh, man. You really did your research for this. So... The cheating, I hesitate to call it a problem in speedrunning, because it's not. It really isn't. It's like less than, you know, 0.5%, I would say, ever. And that's across the history of, like, all speedrunning. Yes, even the videos that you, the listener, have seen. But the problem is it gains viewership. Because people like watching drama. And unfortunately, what that does is it creates a culture, a viewpoint that all speedrunners cheat, and it's just a matter of time until they get found out. And unfortunately, what that leads to is a bunch of people, you know, coming into the subreddit or coming into, you know, the various discords of games I speedrun, going, I think this person is cheating because, you know, X. And there are so many things, so many reasons that people have nowadays. You know, it varies from, you know, oh, I did audio inspection of this run to like, this person is better than me and therefore they're cheating. You know, just it's really dumb stuff. And I really just don't like that so many of speedrunning's biggest content creators have focused so much of their energy on this really, really insanely negative part of our hobby, because it doesn't create a positive image of us. You know, it sure, there are people who have hunted down and figured out the ways in which, you know, this person is cheating. And I think that's very admirable. I think it's completely fine to remove cheaters from your community. But what I disagree with is people who are uninvolved in that particular community trying to make an issue out of it. You know, and there's so much more positivity in speedrunning itself that could be talked about. There's, you know, a zillion games out there getting speedrun. You could talk about new world records that were set. You could talk about, you know, one of the all-time greats of speedrunning content creation is Summoning Salt, and he talks about, you know, he does deep dives on world record history. And the downside of that is that it requires people to do a lot of research and take a lot of time doing this, because some of speedrunning's earliest achievements aren't really recorded very well, because it, you know, we didn't know it was going to blow up into this huge thing. But yeah. I you know, they got to do research rather than read the 19-page Word document that was put out about how, you know, runner XYZ is cheating, and then just make that into a video. Like, that's easy. I could do that. But yeah, it's why I always try to like promote and talk about, you know, content creators that are doing like good and cool thing, like, you know, Dr. Swellman doing various like RPG history speedrunning. That's really cool. And you know, stuff like that. I wish that content creators would focus on the positive aspects.
Yeah, well, similarly for how this podcast works is, A, I realized pretty early that I'm just not good with confrontation, and B, yeah, I kind of thought there's so much negativity and plenty of reasons to be negative about the gaming scene, you know, but there's a lot of good too. So I really made it a point to, okay, I'm going to look for people that I gel with, that I want to talk to, that I think have interesting stories, and we'll focus on that. Like, I don't want to have a half hour or whatever conversation where I'm just like, I don't like what you're doing. You know, what is that?
Yeah, and that's one of the things, like, you know, don't get me wrong. I'm all about, I feel I should add this caveat, because there are people who, like, have this opinion or whatever, that if I'm decrying, you know, making videos about cheating, that, oh, I'm secretly a cheater. It's like, no, I think it's not good to watch or create for the community.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very weird. I wish people would stop doing it, especially because, you know, I have, you know, some personal experience, not directly on me, but one of my friends was, I'm not going to defend what they did, and I'm also not going to say who it is, because I feel like they have served their penance at this point. They were a much younger person, certainly not a great thing to do, whatever, move past it. But they were the subject of one of these videos, and in return, they got death threats and their house got doxxed.
Oh my god.
And it's like, this is wild, what are you people doing? It's like, they spliced a run for a speedrun, who cares?
Yeah.
It ain't that big.
Well, we're getting close to winding down here. Just a couple more questions. Nothing as heavy as we were just covering.
Sure. Let's talk about some good stuff.
Sure. Well, the first one, maybe not good, but what's the most frustrating run killer to you?
Oh, in games that I've run?
Hmm.
I mean, it would have to be the classic. The RNG in Borderlands 2. because we've routed the RUD such that exactly when you hit level 10, you need a rocket launcher. And if you don't get a rocket launcher, that's half an hour down the toilet, baby. You got to reset. And we have so many RUDs that have died to that because you just get there and you try a couple times. You don't get a rocket launcher. It's like, better reset. You know, I'm really glad that I never got into a game like Super Mario Sunshine, which, you know, God bless it. Incredible RUD. I find it very fascinating to watch. But there's like a 10-minute forced scene at the beginning of every run, and I would go bonkers if I had to reset that often. Thankfully, nowadays, actually, one of the good things that speedrunners are doing to like avoid, you know, really boring stuff like that. Super Mario Sunshine runners now run from I think they call it hacked file. I'm not totally sure of the terminology, but they run from a file that's past that 10 minutes, and that's where the run starts. So they just start with 10 minutes on the timer and go from there.
I feel like they could just not start at 10 minutes, and we can just, you know, the run is
there. Yeah, no, that's definitely a thing. There's like 45 seconds of movement in there or something, which is why they count it, but whatever.
Right.
I know, I'm not going to. But I think that's great. I think anything you can do to make your run less boring for you personally and for viewers to watch is great.
Mm-hmm.
Like in Bioshock Infinite, they're looking for a 2% chance to get a specific piece of gear in it. And after runners, you know, resetting to it, and the run was just dying for like a year, eventually they just wrote a mod that gives you it. And it changed nothing about the run.
What's your favorite speed run? It doesn't have to be your own. Just one you've seen, or maybe it is your own. What do you think is the most amazing?
Okay, I can give my most amazing GDQ run while in the back of my mind I start thinking about my favorite speed run. Most amazing GDQ run, hands down, bar none, is Teaminator 64's Beautiful Joe run from AGDQ 2014. It is, in my opinion, the gold standard of GDQ runs. It is the best run I've ever seen. It's a super hard game, super high execution. His commentary is flawless. You know, my man rips through the game. I think about that run a lot because that's what I would like my commentary to be, is that kind of, that level of fluid. It's so good. If anyone listening to this hasn't seen it, recommend you go watch it. Incredible run. My favorite speed run to do, I keep going back to the well, but I think Borderlands 2 is just one of my favorite runs to do. There's a lot of expression in how you can play. There's a lot of different things you can do. The routing is even, it slightly differs between runners. Obviously it doesn't differ that much, but you know, you can almost tell who's playing a run, even if you can't see who it is, by like how they're playing, which I find really cool. I like that kind of stuff in video games.
Last thing before I let you go, a little self-serving question here. How does one get involved with perhaps being an interviewer at GDQ?
Let's see. If you're talking about on-air talent, I actually don't know much about that. Because despite the fact that it goes on stream, there's a separate side of interviewer that handles it. But I would say if you're looking to get involved in GDQ in any way, whether if you're looking to get involved behind the scenes, if you're not looking to be a runner, just volunteer for the event. That's my biggest pitch. That's how I got started. I started volunteering as a stage tech, which is the people running on stage, unplugging and replugging the consoles in between runs. And, you know, I just stayed on it for long enough, got focused enough on what I was doing. And they eventually said, hey, do you want to do production for us? And I said, okay, sure. And I think it's been largely the same with, you know, all the interview people. It's just you start as a volunteer. And then, you know, after an event or two, you just approach the head of the thing and say, "Hey, I would like to do more for you, if you'll have me."
Thank you.
Yeah, and then if you want to run a game, pick your favorite game and start running. You know, there's, I can't give much more than that. You know, a lot of people, a really common thing on the subreddit is, how do I start speedrunning? And the answer is, you just have to do it. You just have to pick up a game and start playing it fast. Put a timer on it and play it. Then when you finish that run, start the timer over and do it again, but faster. And that's speedrunning in a nutshell.
I think my plan, I'll make up a category. I'll be like, oh, it's glitchless, and I have to hit this wall, and I have to blah, 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 you know, then, okay, I'm the fastest at that.
No, I mean, that's for sure. Like, there are definitely categories that I'm sure even we haven't thought about. That's like a way to do a game, because, you know, people just be coming up with all kinds of weird stuff. You know, we're seeing a lot of randomizers now. We're seeing a lot of, like, you know, we got a swordless submission for Legend of Zelda: Link to the Past.
Wow.
Which is like, do the whole game but without a sword.
Wow.
Yeah, so there's a lot of ways to play games, and I think it's really cool to get to see them.
People can check you out. You're streaming twitch.tv/Amerlin. That's AMYRLINN. You're also Amerlin on YouTube. Anywhere else you want them to check you out?
That's pretty much it. You know, if you want to learn about FPS games or whatever my special interest at the time is, or Final Fantasy 14, which I've been playing a lot lately, you know, Twitter, Discord, Blue Sky, YouTube, Twitch, all Amerlin.
Amerlin, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you too.